Support for IPR comes from Corridor Vein Center and Corridor Aesthetics, treatment for varicose veins and spider veins, also providing facial rejuvenation services and treatment for moderate to severe acne. More at Corridor Vein and CorridorAesthetics.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is the Talk of Iowa Book Club. We've been reading The Seed Keeper by Diane Wilson. Published in 2021, the novel takes place in Minnesota and tells the story of Rosalie Ironwing. She's a Dakota woman, raised by her father until his death when she was 12 years old. Instead of placing young Rosalie with family or members of her tribe, social services placed her with a white family in Mankato, Minnesota. She grew up isolated from her culture and abused by her foster mom. She finds safety and freedom when she marries a young farmer named John, but she remains disconnected from her heritage and family of origin. After her husband's death in 2002, she returns for the first time to the cabin where she lived with her father. Here's an excerpt from the book where she's remembering her father's words and beginning her journey.
We've lived on this land for many, many generations. Some called us the Great Sioux Nation, but we are Dakota, our name for ourselves, which means friendly. We are a civilized people who understand that our survival depends on knowing how to be a good relative, especially to Ina Maka, Mother Earth. Back in the day, we moved from place to place, knowing when to hunt bison and white-tailed deer, to gather wild plants, and to harvest our maize, a gift from the being who lived in Spirit Lake. You wouldn't recognize this land back then. Over thousands of years, the plants and animals worked with wind and fire until the land was covered in a sea of grass that was home to many relatives. The bison gave us everything, from tado, our meat, to our clothing and teepee hides. His dung fertilized the soil. The prairie dogs opened up tunnels that brought air and water deep into the earth. Grasses that were as tall as a man set long roots that could withstand drought. When my grandfather was a boy, he woke each morning to the song of the meadowlark. The prairies showed us for many generations how to live and work together as one family. And then the settlers came with their plows and destroyed the prairie in a single lifetime, my father said. What I remember most now is his voice shaking with rage, his tobacco-stained fingers trembling as they held a hand-rolled cigarette, the way he drew smoke deep into his lungs. For the past 22 years, I've lived on a farm that once belonged to the prairie. Every summer, I looked out my kitchen window at long rows of corn planted all the way to the oak trees that grow along the river. Even today, after a winter storm had covered the field, I could see dried corn stalks stubbling the fresh white blanket of snow. From the radio on the counter behind me, the announcer read the Daily Hog Report in his flat Midwestern voice. His words meant nothing. They were empty noise, pushing back the silence that had taken over my house. After a breakfast of toast and coffee, I closed the curtains on the window, feeling how thin the cotton had become from too many years in the sun. I stacked clean dishes in the cupboard and wiped down the counters. Routine tasks, comforting in their simplicity. No need to think, to plan, to remember. Just keep moving. I poured the rest of the milk down the drain and straightened a stack of papers on the table. After writing a brief note for my son, I locked the door behind me.
That is an excerpt from The Seed Keeper by Diane Wilson, read by Diane Wilson, who is here with me today. Hello, Diane.
Hello, Charity. I'm very happy to be here today.
Well, it's wonderful to have you here. And this novel, of course, is not just about Rosalie Ironwing. It is also about the history of the Dakota people, the history of the United States, the history of the seeds that the Dakota people grew, depended on, protected for generations. It's about farming. It's about the land. It's about our water. And these are all topics that we're going to talk about with our expert readers in a few minutes. But first, I want to talk about you. So let's go back in time. You are a Midwakanton descendant. You're enrolled in the Rosebud Reservation, but you didn't grow up on the reservation, right? Can you tell me a little bit about your childhood?
I actually grew up in Minneapolis in a suburb called Golden Valley. And back then it was on the far edge of the city, so it was still rural back then. Gravel roads and open fields and woods, and so that gave me a childhood growing up around plants and being outside. So when I was growing up, what I knew about my mother's family was that she was enrolled on the Rosebud Reservation, and she grew up in South Dakota, that she attended a boarding school on the Pine Ridge Reservation, and my dad was of Swedish heritage. So growing up, I was really curious about how her life, my mother's life, was so different from mine in a single generation. And I used to ask her about the boarding schools, and she really didn't know much about them. No one in my family knew about their history or why they had been established. And when I would ask her questions, she would just say, "We were poor, and I'm done with all that." So my mother had made an intentional distance between herself and her community. And as I learned later in writing my first book, which was a memoir, it was very much about making a distance between what had been a difficult childhood with her family growing up in the Depression. And so her boarding school experience was something that she really didn't like to talk about, and so I, as an adult, that was the push that got me writing and thinking about family history.
You're in your childhood, and I mentioned already the gardening part of the book. That was an important part of your life growing up, right?
Well, I did learn gardening from my grandparents on both sides. They both were from the generation that always kept big gardens, so that was one of the ways that they fed their families, especially through the Depression. So I was always around plants. I was around gardening. I learned to appreciate fresh fruit straight from the garden from a very young age. So it was something that I grew up appreciating.
As you began to learn more about your indigenous history, your indigenous heritage, tell me a little bit about how that changed your place in the world.
Well, there was always the question of who are we when you grow up with a mother who is enrolled on a reservation and a father who is of Swedish heritage. So there is a mixed culture in our family that was always perplexing to me. And especially, I had a lot of questions about my mother's family and her history and what it was like for her growing up. The history books tend to present the history of Europeans. So I felt like I understood how my father's family had come to this country, to come to the state. But what I didn't understand was my mother's family. And so those were the questions that I carried into my life as an adult. And the more I learned about the forced assimilation, especially through boarding schools, when children were forbidden to speak their language, they were removed from their families, that gave me the impetus and a sense of responsibility for sharing this story and for making sure that in my own life, I wanted to honor that connection that my family has had for many generations, and to understand that even though assimilation has had a big impact on who we are, you can still make that choice to do the work of cultural recovery. You can learn your traditions, you can learn your language, you can help your community, you can give back, which is one of the reasons why I wrote this book.
You have also served as executive director of Dream of Wild Health and the Native American Food Sovereignty Alliance. So you have done a great deal of work in preserving traditional growing, traditional seeds. I mean, so much of indigenous culture through preserving seeds and through the food sovereignty programs. Tell me how that work began for you.
Well, when I was working on the memoir about my mother's family, which was all about trying to understand assimilation and the impact of these programs like boarding schools on my own family, I also heard about a little program at that time called Dream of Wild Health. And they were growing out a handful of old rare tribal seeds. They had been given a collection from a Potawatomi seed keeper named Cora Baker. And so I'm also a gardener. So I immediately got involved as a volunteer because I was fascinated with those seeds. You know, to me, they were carrying stories of the land, but they were also carrying the stories of the people who grew them. So there was Cherokee Trail of Tears corn, for example, that was descended from that original removal. And so you have that incredible legacy. And so I became involved as a gardener and a writer, wanting to really understand those seeds and support the work around growing them again and bringing them back to our communities as food. And so that really began what was a 20-year relationship. Actually, it's still going. I continue to volunteer with Dream of Wild Health. So it was a long journey of helping with this work, get it established, food sovereignty for our communities. But it also taught me what I needed to know in order to be able to write this book.
And we will find out more about that in just a moment. I am talking with Diane Wilson. She is the author of The Seed Keeper. It's our Talk of Iowa book club book, a book that follows the journey of Rosalie Ironwing, a Dakota woman who was raised by white families, separated from her culture as she reconnects with her past. It's also the All Iowa Reads book for 2024, and we will talk more in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from IPR News.
Support for this IPR podcast comes from Iowa Community Foundations, an initiative of the Iowa Council of Foundations, connecting donors to causes they care about. Details on the Endow Iowa Tax Credit Program at communityfoundations.org. Support for IPR comes from the Healing Room at Upstream Functional Medicine, offering medical spa services that support the body's natural ability to detoxify from environmental challenges. Learn more about the Healing Room at upstreamfm.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is the Talk of Iowa Book Club, and we've been reading The Seed Keeper by Diane Wilson. It's also the All Iowa Reads book for 2024. The Seed Keeper tells the story of Rosalie Ironwing, a Dakota woman who's been separated and isolated from her tribe and her history. We follow her journey as she rebuilds that connection and embraces the legacy of heritage seeds that have been protected and preserved by Dakota people through many hardships and generations. We will meet our expert readers in just a moment. With me right now is Diane Wilson, the author of the book. And Diane, before we bring our expert readers into the conversation, this is your debut novel. You said that it took about 8 or 9 years to write, but you've also said that it was really in many ways 20 years in the making. And some of the germs of the idea for this novel came from a march that you participated in. Can you tell me about that?
Yes, thank you for asking this question. The march that I have mentioned and is an important part of the book was the 1862 Dakota Commemorative March. So right around the time I was getting involved with Dream of Wild Health and working on the memoir and really grappling with these questions around assimilation and cultural identity, I heard about the first ever commemorative Dakota March that was to honor the 1,700 Dakota women, children, and elders who were forcibly removed from the state following the 1862 U.S.-Dakota War. And the march actually followed as close as possible to the original 150-mile walk in November, from November 7th to the 13th. And this was, so you think of, it was a 4-mile train of people that were unprepared for the weather, that had been rounded up and then forced to walk from the Lower Sioux Reservation area to a concentration camp at Fort Snelling. And so the story that I was told while we were on this march recreating this original walk was that because Dakota women had no way of knowing where they were being sent or how they would feed their families, they hid their seeds in the hems of their skirts and in their pockets, so that even when families were hungry and children were hungry, they protected those seeds because they knew they would need them to plant wherever it was that they were going. And it's also a way of ensuring that you have food for the coming season and you also have seeds for future generations. So that story just touched my heart so deeply. And the idea that these women cared so much about their seeds and regarded that relationship with their seeds as so important to the survival of their people, that they would make whatever sacrifices were necessary to protect them. And so that was, to me, was a key lesson that is still just as important today, that we need to protect these seeds because they're very important to our survival as human beings.
And that story is beautifully woven throughout the novel, in addition to the fictional parts of the novel as well. Again, the novel we're talking about is The Seed Keeper by Diane Wilson. And I do want to bring our expert readers into the conversation now. Oogie Push is here, an artist and a filmmaker. She's a member of the Meskwaki Nation and recently directed the documentary Tama Flint, which is about Meskwaki's heritage corn. Hello, Oogie.
Hello.
It is wonderful to have you here. And Oogie, tell me about your reaction, just your first reaction in reading the novel.
I'm laughing because just listening to Diane talk about the women saving the seed corn, it made me cry. So I'm kind of crying, just like filled with so much gratitude for the ancestors that came before us and made sure that we had these seeds. And reading the book was really like kind of reading about my life. It was like the most accurate representation that I've ever had in a book about Native people, Native women, and the histories that we come from. It was just a very full and rich storytelling of, our culture, Dakota culture, and the indigenous worldview.
I want to bring Denise O'Brien into the conversation too. She is founder of the Women Food and Agriculture Network and a farmer in Iowa. Denise, welcome.
Oh, Charity, thank you so much for inviting me.
And there are so many different threads that come together in this novel. And it's so interesting to hear Oogie say that she saw herself portrayed in this novel. Denise, I'm sure that you also saw yourself portrayed in this novel, but we'll talk more about that in a moment. But tell me about your reaction.
Well, apart from being a white privileged woman who is a farmer on the land in Iowa, I related so much to the farm crisis, the GMO. It makes me emotional to even talk about it. All of those issues that Rosalie Ironwing faced, and I didn't have the cultural tension, of course, but just related so strongly with her wondering and her, trying to figure out where she is in the world.
And what is the right path forward for farmers who want to make a living, but also want to do right by the land, right, Denise?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
All right. Well, I do want to dive into some of the many, many themes in this novel. And I want to start with really where Rosalie's story starts. So she was being raised by her father, a single father. Her mother had passed away when she was young, and she was growing up in her culture, a culture that was very important to her father. He was extremely knowledgeable about it, but he also struggled with his own demons. And he ended up dying when Rosalie was 12 years old, and then she was taken by social services. Even though she had family members who would have raised her, who wanted to raise her, she was separated and taken by social services. And we know that this is a story that has happened again and again to Indigenous children, where they were removed from their culture in a very purposeful way. And Oogie, you can respond to that first, but I thought that, you know, Diane did such a beautiful job helping us see how Rosalie's connection to her culture was broken in such a horrible, horrible act.
Yeah, it's, the whole history of that is really sad. And I think Diane did a great job of explaining the importance of ICWA and the damage that it can do to families. And, you know, that lifelong need to find the children that were taken, and then, you know, they get to reunite, which was so amazing. But yeah, I love how, even though Rosalie, you know, was taken when she was 12, she still retained a lot of what her dad taught her. And that really helped her get through, you know, the next chapters in her life.
Yeah. Well, and Diane, you write, you know, there are all these generations that we revisit. We go back in time and learn about Rosalie's ancestors as well. But you earlier mentioned that your mother had gone to a boarding school. And this is just all part of a pattern in United States history of separating Indigenous children from their families in an effort to assimilate them.
Yes, it was very intentional. What I recall from the history I was learning is that there was a point at which the decision had to be made whether to exterminate or educate. And so education through boarding schools was a way of working through the children, so that by removing them from their culture, from their language, from their spirituality, from their families, they would grow up knowing Christianity. They would grow up knowing a very different way of life that included a very different relationship with the earth. So the boarding school theme was really important to me to work through in this novel. And it was one of the reasons why I wanted to show that long story arc across multiple generations, so that you could see how the impacts of different programs like boarding schools roll forward through generations.
Well, and not just the impacts rolling forward, but also seeing each generation face yet another challenge to their sovereignty and to their way of life.
Yes, that's right. The boarding schools, because they removed children at a time when they needed parenting and didn't receive it, then when they grew up to become parents, then that was used as a pretext by social services to come in and remove children. And sometimes the children were removed to a boarding school situation, or sometimes they were removed later on after that phase, they were removed to white families. So it has been a very targeted, intentional program of assimilation through children, which I find to be so difficult to think about in some ways, targeting innocent children.
And Denise, you know, obviously, for me at least, this wasn't a history that I was taught when I was growing up. It wasn't something that we talked about. It wasn't openly acknowledged. It was something that I have learned about as an adult. I suspect you're in a similar position. So give me your response to seeing that generational pattern in the novel.
I thought it was really remarkable, Diane, that how you brought forward the issues that happened historically into the present, and that, you know, for our deeper understanding. And I must say, I have in my lifetime have been privileged to have some very close Native American friends that have helped me understand this and help me to understand the history of our country being, you know, based on slavery and genocide. And it's not a pleasant history, but it's a history that we need to come to grips with. And unfortunately, in the time that we're living now, we're trying to erase that.
There's a point when Rosalie is growing up, and again, completely isolated from her family and her culture, but she makes a Native American friend, the other Indigenous student at her high school. She and Gabby makes peace, connect with each other. And she connects a little bit with Gabby's family, but we also see this is a family under such stress that, you know, Gabby's being raised by her Aunt Vera. And, you know, as a reader, I wanted Aunt Vera so much to take Rosalie under her wing. But Aunt Vera didn't have that sort of capacity left. I thought that you did such a beautiful job, Diane, really showing us the strain that Aunt Vera was under in raising her relations.
You know, that Gabby was such an interesting character to develop and write. And she was probably the easiest one to develop of all of them. And, you know, she was one of the ways that I could show how historical trauma moves across generations, so that you see this family that so often media portrays only the dysfunction in Native communities without the context of the history that led up to these points. But I also wanted to show the love and the care, and that despite everything, these families, our families, are rebuilding, they're reclaiming, they're recovering culture. And I wanted to show how it's always possible, that recovery, that work is always possible.
Oogie, tell me about your reaction to meeting that family, Gabby and her Aunt Vera and her older brother, Anthony.
Yeah, it just seemed like a kind of like a typical Native family just trying to get through, you know, and living the life that they were dealt, and still having, you know, love for each other.
I felt like, again, you know, as a reader, there are so many moments where I want things to go the right way. And this is a family that just couldn't catch a break in so many ways, even though, you know, Gabby, Aunt Vera was extraordinary. Gabby was extraordinary. And they were both working so hard and doing their best. And Anthony also, even though he winds up imprisoned and deals with a lot of challenges, he's trying so hard and doing his best. And Diane, was there a temptation to make things easier for these people?
I wish things were easier for Native families, but that was part of my experience of working in community, was all the stories, the hard stories, the kids that were coming up to Dream of Wild Health programs were just so full of promise, but also so full of challenges and struggles. So I really wanted to honor that. I wanted to honor the reality that Native families are experiencing, and also show that connection back to this deeper history of because of these, you know, because of the removals, because of the boarding schools, because of all of these different assimilation programs, you have Native families who are just struggling to survive and raise their children again. And yet to be able to connect it back to this deeper, longer history of what is such a beautiful culture that has always taken care of children as sacred. And so I wanted to show how trauma makes a disconnect between what is that traditional way of raising children and having families and the struggles that Native families are facing today.
We're going to have to take another short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We are talking about the novel The Seed Keeper by Diane Wilson, which is also the All Iowa Reads book for 2024. The novel tells the story of Rosalie Ironwing. She's a Dakota woman who has been separated from her family. She's been isolated from her culture. And we follow her journey as she rebuilds her connections, as she embraces the legacy of heritage seeds that have been protected and preserved by Dakota people through many generations. With me today is the author, Diane Wilson, and also our expert readers. Oogie Push is an artist and a filmmaker and a member of the Meskwaki Nation. And Denise O'Brien, founder of the Women, Food, and Agriculture Network. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR comes from the Healing Room at Upstream Functional Medicine, offering medical spa services that support the body's natural ability to detoxify from environmental challenges. Learn more about the Healing Room at upstreamfm.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is the Talk of Iowa Book Club, and we have been reading The Seed Keeper by Diane Wilson. It is the story of Rosalie Ironwing. She is a Dakota woman who, in her childhood, was taken from her tribe, taken from her family by social services, and isolated from her culture and history. We follow her journey as she rebuilds that connection, and also as she embraces this legacy of heritage seeds that have been protected and preserved by Dakota people through many generations. With me today is the author, Diane Wilson, and our expert readers. Denise O'Brien is founder of the Women, Food, and Agriculture Network, and Oogie Push is an artist and a filmmaker. She is a member of the Meskwaki Nation. She recently directed a documentary about Meskwaki corn called Tama Flint. And let's talk about farming. In this book, Rosalie is raised by a white foster family. She has an abusive and controlling foster mother, and she finds escape when she meets a young farmer. She's just graduated from high school, and she marries a farmer that she doesn't know well. His name is John, and he is a white farmer. She does come to love him, and they spend 22 years together. They have a son together, and they build a life together, even though we do see that Rosalie still remains so isolated from her culture during that time. And Diane, what made you want to set this novel in this time period where we really get an intimate look at farming in the 70s and 80s as it goes through a tremendous change?
Well, I wanted to show, first of all, with Rosalie and John, how our worldviews as people, the cultures we come from, influence our relationships with the earth. So that Rosalie, even though her father died when she was only 12, she retains that relationship that the Dakota express as Matakuyeawasi. We are all related. So to her, everything around her is a relative. And so you treat the earth, the oil, your plants as relatives. Whereas John came from a different cultural background that really regarded land and plants as commodities. And by having the two of them marry, I could have those two worldviews bump up against each other and show the tension, especially in raising a child who has to choose. But I wanted to show in particular in that time frame how this relationship with seeds, with soil, for farmers evolved so much after World War II, when chemical companies got involved and needed to figure out another way to use up surplus chemicals that were originally purposed for wartime purposes, and to show how farmers have also really struggled to survive and to retain what were, to me, in the earlier times, some very similar relationships and values to the land. So I think of the time when farmers were really taking care of their families and rotating their crops and putting manure on the soil so that the soil was always healthy. And that was a relationship that was much closer to the way native gardeners have always taken care of the soil. So I wanted to show farmers as struggling with these changes that have come from the outside, from large international companies who are intentionally driving our food system in a direction because it results in greater profits. So I wanted to show a compassionate view of farmers and to establish in a way that commons between all of us as human beings in our relationship to the earth. And that's why I had Rosalie learn, she finds the seeds that John's mother kept. And that's where she starts to work with seeds so that we have that sense of this is a human birthright to take care of seeds, soil, and water, and that we need to look at where our relationship with our food has gone.
And I know Oogie said earlier that she felt, you know, so represented in this novel. And I made a little bit of a joke, Denise, about you probably seeing yourself in the novel as well. But I mean, this is history that you lived as a farmer, seeing that transition to a more intensive chemical farming, to the embracing of GMOs. And one of the reasons that I asked you to be part of this book club is because when I was reading about Judith, the neighbor of Rosalie, Judith and George live on a neighboring farm, I thought, she kind of reminds me of Denise. You know who would be great for this show? Did she kind of remind you a little bit of you, Denise?
Oh, yes, Charity. You know, I learned farming from my husband, and we're still on the family land. And he wanted to be an organic farmer when I met him in the 1970s. And it just amazes me how he was able to stay with that as the other farmers changed around us and sort of looked at us askance. And like if they knew we were going to have weeds in our fields. So, you know, if we didn't use herbicides and things, but Larry was very strong about that. And now we have a greenhouse, and I just came in from it before we started this program, and I was transplanting my big blue stem and little blue stem and some side oats grandma that I'll be selling later on this spring. And so it just, all of this story with the farm crisis where I came up, and then the GMO issues, and that we were milking cows at one time, and the bovine somatotropin, the BST, that made cows basically disposable. We've fought that all of our farm lives. And this resonated quite strongly with me.
There's an episode in the book where I don't want to spoil the plot for people, but I guess I am a little bit. George and Judith wind up losing their farm because of the cross-pollination of GMO crops into their organic crops. And they got basically charged with theft by this large corporation that was selling seed to all of the neighboring farmers. And someone likely made a call and tipped off the company to sue George. And it was such an ugly, ugly event, and there are many repercussions from it. Did that resonate with you, Denise? I think about the tension between conventional and organic farmers, but I guess I had not thought of it as being so cutthroat and cruel in some occasions.
Oh, cutthroat and cruel is exactly right, Charity. The thing that amazed us during this time of the adoption of the GMO seeds, the genetically altered seeds, was the fact that they had, there were PSAs on the radio that said, and we were big radio listeners, it said, if you know someone who's using these seeds and selling them to you, you better report them. You know, more or less they said that. And this was a true, based on a true story of Dennis, of a farmer up in Canada that did get sued, and people rallied around to help. But I think he still lost the farm, even though there was such a big rally around this issue.
We see the turmoil that Rosalie experiences as, again, she sees her husband and her son trying to make a living on the family farm. And they're not villains. You know, we don't, you do such a beautiful job, Diane, showing us the humanity in every person, really, that we encounter in this novel. Was that really important to you, to make sure that we understood the nuance and not the black and white of these topics, which are so often portrayed in black and white?
It was very important to me. I didn't want there to be villains in this story. And if you look at the format of the book, you'll see that the seeds open the story and they close it. So the perspective I was trying to hold was that of the seeds observing all of this. So that when I look at, well, what is best for the seeds then? Is it that we have we have Native people bringing back their traditional gardening and the values that inform those practices, but we don't want to leave out farmers. We have to all be engaged in this work. We have to all be supporting what is best for the seeds. And so I was trying to show that the farmers are also invested in that. We're all invested, really, when you come to this work, caring about the health of your families and your communities, then you have to take care of your soil. You have to take care of your seeds and your water. And so I believe that farmers also come from that perspective, just as Denise was saying, as organic farmers. And I wanted to show that we have that in common, and that's what's best for the seeds.
Before we run out of time, Oogie, I want to talk about corn, and which plays such an important part in this story. And I was reading this novel at the same time that I watched your documentary, Tama Flint, A Meskwaki Tradition, which is about the specific species of corn that has been a part of the Meskwaki tradition, that has been protected by the Meskwaki people. And I just, the parallels are overwhelming as we see Rosalie when she returns to her community, when she reconnects to her aunt, Darlene Kills Deer. She gets to plant this traditional corn of the Dakota people and is working so hard to keep that seed alive. What was that like for you, Oogie, basically to read this true story that you had just made a documentary about as part of a novel?
Yeah, this is where, you know, part of how, you know, I see myself in it, and, you know, how Tama Flint also had the struggles of, you know, providing revenue for the tribe. And we used to grow thousands of acres, and all our land was taken, you know, because the corn grew so well in the Midwest area. And, you know, just the, I guess, predatory behavior of like these big ag companies that come in. And, but also, I guess another spoiler, but the storm. And it was like, I was getting flashbacks of the derecho.
Right. I don't know if you've gotten to see Oogie's documentary, but you should see it. And she's got, you know, footage, a derecho struck Tama and flattened all of these gardens full of corn. And yes, I was thinking exactly the same thing, that is exactly what happens to Rosalie in her garden when this terrible hailstorm flattens her corn, this precious seed.
I felt the pain.
I think every Midwestern gardener and farmer lives in fear of hail and straight line winds.
And in this case, the seed was so precious and so rare that Rosalie felt like she had lost the seed that had been protected for generations because of her failed garden. So, I mean, the pressure was just extraordinary there. We only have a few minutes left, and I would just love to ask all of you, you know, this is a book, it's been chosen as the All Iowa Reads novel for 2024. Denise, why do you think everybody should read this book?
Oh my, that's such a good question. That's so difficult to answer, but it's just, I like the historical value of it, the empathy that Diane portrayed as we've been talking today, the empathy for the farmers, because the white farmers are, they're caught in a trap. And that's the way I feel about my neighbors, is that it's a system that's been set up not for the benefit of people. And so I think people could understand, would be able to understand that a bit better. But the transition and the tension between our two cultures is incredible.
Oogie, why do you think people should read this book?
Oh, it's a great story that's filled with a lot of historical facts, but also the way that it's interwoven into the life of, or the lives of the characters is so rich. And I just have to give a shout out to Diane for the way that you've structured your chapters and the way that you've changed Rosalie's name when she was married and not married. And, you know, the timeline was really helpful. And, you know, it's just a brilliant, brilliant book.
And it, I mean, it's such a well-written novel. It just carries you through, even though we're learning the whole time. Diane, I didn't feel like you were pedantically teaching us history in any way. But I mean, that makes me think that this is such a powerful way for you to continue the work that you have been doing for 20 years, both in food sovereignty, but also in really this connection with your Indigenous culture and helping people understand our history. Does a novel help you do that in a new and different way?
Well, I do love moving around in forms, but a novel opened up a whole new world where I could direct the story and the themes that it carried in a way that gave me a lot more freedom than writing in nonfiction. But I wanted to add, too, that we've talked a lot today about some of the hard history that is part of the book and is and it is important to learn. But I also wanted to add that one of the reasons I wanted to tell this story was because the seeds themselves bring joy. You know, they're so beautiful. They're so giving. They're so brilliant in the way that they work in the world. You know, who else can carry a little spark of life and just hold it until you get the right rain, the right sun? So I wanted to share that when we reconnect with these old seeds, you know, maybe the ones that were carried in your family or seeds that you just love the foods that they provide, it just creates joy and it builds community because we come together to do this work. We come together to share meals. We come together to share our seeds. And that ultimately, I hope that is one of the good takeaways from this story, is that there's great joy and beauty in reclaiming these relationships.
Diane Wilson, thank you so much. Diane Wilson is the author of The Seed Keeper, the 2024 selection for All Iowa Reads. Our expert readers were filmmaker and artist Oogie Push and Denise O'Brien, founder of the Women, Food, and Agriculture Network. Thank you to Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City for providing books for our readers. You can join the Talk of Iowa Book Club on Facebook. Just search for IPR's Talk of Iowa Book Club. This episode was produced by Caitlin Troutman. I'm Charity Nebbie.